From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. The producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director, Jason Croft. My name is Celeste Quinn. Lots of us live with and love cats. More cats share our homes than dogs. There are more than 73 million cats in American homes as opposed to 68 million dogs. 30% of U.S. households have at least one cat. Well, once a month on this program, we talk about dogs, where we sometimes get questions about cats. Rarely do we do a program about cats, but today that is changing. We are going to talk about feline veterinary care. Cats get our full attention this morning in this portion of the program. Our guest today is Dr. Carrie Carlson. Her practice is devoted to feline medicine and surgery. Listeners, you can join us by phone or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Dr. Carlson is a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. She specializes in feline medicine and surgery at her Champaign clinic, the Cat Clinic of Central Illinois. Her special interests include geriatrics and internal medicine. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm so pleased to have you here, Dr. Carlson, today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So, what led you to your passion for cats?
Actually, I stumbled upon my adoration for cats when I was in high school and actually working in a clerical situation, and they had a company cat. I've never really been exposed to cats. I always grew up with horses and dogs, and that cat changed my life. And at that point, there was no turning back.
And what was it about that cat that hooked you?
He just he had me so fascinated by their independence, their self-reliance, and it just fascinated me.
Yeah, they're also beautiful animals. Mm-hmm. They're so graceful. They're sensuous.
Yes,
they're lovely animals. Well, I suspect, though, that while the number of households with a cat now outnumbers those with a dog or dogs,
correct,
I think that we still have a lot of misconceptions or misunderstandings about cats. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I do. I think, again, when I mentioned what fascinated me as far as their independence, I think that sometimes can even strike a level of fear with people as far as interacting a cat, since they are, again, self-reliant. They don't necessarily have to be with us every moment as compared to a dog when they're far more interactive with a human being. Cats can be more reclusive, and that could be more normal for them, although that's another thing I wanted to touch on as far as reclusivity as a potential problem as a sign of disease.
Oh, okay. Maybe we should go there immediately.
Okay.
Because that's something I think that I don't know if it's in the ether or where I've picked this up, but I think that dogs get to the vet more often than cats.
Absolutely.
And what should we be on the lookout for in terms of cat health when we know they've got to go? And also, would you talk about what kind of routine care in terms of checkups cats require?
Definitely. It's less than 2% of cats in these households actually make it to a veterinary clinic, because the main stresses that are imposed upon the cat, as far as putting them in a carrier, putting them in a car, the client is actually hearing the cat scream and cry.
Sure.
That distresses the owner. They don't want to have to put the cat through that. Cats are very good at hiding disease, so as far as them demanding a client to go ahead and bring the cat in, as far as changes in behavior, sleeping habits, water intake, defecation, if that becomes any type of abnormality, they should be seen by a veterinarian right away.
Okay. Why are they good at hiding disease, and how do they do that?
They've evolved that way as far as because they are a prey species. Predators, the coyotes, larger dogs can go get them in the wild. So they've evolved to find a way to hide that from their predators so that they won't become their prey.
Yeah. Well, in the house, if you have a cat that is fearful for some reason, either there's a large noise or some stranger has come to the home and the cat feels uncomfortable around this individual, you will see the cat take a hike.
And hide.
Disappear. Mm-hmm. Out of here.
They want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how often should we say, I know this is hard on both of us, but we're going to go to see the vet. How often should we take cats in to see the veterinarian, there we go.
Definitely yearly. That's the most important thing. When you have a cat that's getting to be around the age of 7 or up, we highly recommend that they're seen twice a year. When the annual checkups are performed, any cat 7 and up also should have a blood pressure done, laboratory work as far as blood work. A urine sample should be collected, no different than when we go see our family physician for our physical exam and workup, because that's the other way that we as veterinarians can detect any changes in their biological status, if there's any disease that's already beginning to manifest before we can see clinical signs, as what I'd mentioned before, the weight loss or change in appetite, which we can check and pick up on those subtle clues, compared to an owner, even though they're seeing that cat every single day, they may not be noticing those subtle changes.
Yeah. Also, changes in terms of elimination.
Definitely.
And the litter box behaviors there.
Yes.
Okay. And in terms of making that trip to the vet easier for both parties, what can we do?
The number one recommendation I always have is to take that carrier and leave it out, because it becomes the scary box. Every time they hear that jingle jangle, then there's an argument with the owner and the cat to try and get the cat in, and it'll only escalate and make it worse. I definitely recommend that you keep that carrier out. You can make it and turn into a little kitty cave, if you will. Put their favorite blanket, put their favorite toys. It becomes a place of solace for them so that they'll feel more comfortable and secure. So once that they're in that carrier, they're brought in, it's not that terrorizing environment that I know I'm going somewhere, because cats do not like their environment changed either.
And can this work for, can you habituate a cat who is older if you leave that carrier out?
Absolutely.
Because that is an issue. You know, when the carrier comes out, they have such a keen sense of hearing. Mm-hmm. They can hear it. They can hear the hinge on the door.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're actually picking up on your anxiety also.
Oh, for sure.
That's already adding again, escalating to the whole situation. Yeah. So we also recommend there's a pheromone spray or even a pheromone diffuser called Feel Away. It's a synthetic pheromone from the cat's gland that's underneath their chin. If you see a cat when they're walking around the house marking their territory, it also makes them feel comfortable. It releases a level of dopamine in their brain to make them comfortable. It's not a drug. It's not toxic. It's something else that I always recommend, either in the spray version or keep it out when that carrier is out, to help acclimate and say, it's okay. It's all right. You can go on in there.
Does that work for me?
I've never had a human tell them it makes them feel calm. But.
Well, what kind of signals am I giving my cat at a time of when I'm anxious? Like I've got company coming. I'm going to go on a trip where the routine is different. That happens. That's one way the cat knows, something's up. But what kind of signals should I be aware of, and how can I calm down, you know, before I make that trip to the vet?
I think taking deep breaths, trying to maintain a level of calmness yourself, and just try and put your mind in a different area, because they're picking up on any subtle clue,
sure.
Your body language. I wouldn't doubt they're picking up on chemical changes within your body, too. But, I mean, they're very perceptive animals.
Yeah, very interesting. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about cats with Dr. Carrie Carlson. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments. Join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. When you started in vet med, did you know you would specialize in feline veterinary medicine?
Yeah, from the beginning. That was my plan from the beginning. Actually, I was more interested in dealing with the large exotic cats. I had done an externship at a large cat sanctuary that was in Sharon, Wisconsin, but they had to move to the East Coast, and I was fascinated by the lions and the tigers and the jaguars, but realizing the little ones there might be a little bit more easier to handle for me.
And there are more of them who
yes,
need your care.
Exactly. So, but I knew from the time that I went into vet school that that was my intention, just to specialize in just cats only.
Yeah. How common is that now?
It's becoming more common. I think the very first cat-only clinic was in the early 1970s, and I believe it was in California. The second one followed suit in Chicago, and that practice is still up and running. That one came again shortly thereafter, and they've been slowly growing from there. People do appreciate the specialized care and mainly the minimization of the stress and the anxiety for the cat, not hearing the barking dogs, not being in that particular environment. Not every cat lives in a household that has a dog. And again, as I mentioned in the beginning, that is their a predator to them.
Yeah, okay. Well, one of the things that I find most interesting about whether it's dogs or cats is the bond that we share that develops between human and animal. How is that different between cat and human, dog and human?
Different in what sense?
In terms of, well, we know, I think you alluded to this at the outset, that cats can be seen as a little more aloof, but that doesn't mean they don't need us or don't like us, that there isn't a bond. It's just different. So there is a unique difference between how we relate, how dogs and humans relate, how cats and humans relate.
Again, I think it's that I don't want to say reclusivity, but it's that independence. And I think once you develop that bond with the cat, we do know that by just holding a cat, there's a hormone that's released called oxytocin, which actually has a calming effect, a bonding effect immediately ensues thereafter. So there is actually a chemical process that gets involved here. But I think when just not only just the purring, the petting, the interaction that people have, this unique, beautiful animal sitting with them, I think for them, the bond just grows from there.
Yeah. Now, people have this idea that cats are aloof, and yes, they are more independent, I think, than dogs. I think that's fair to say. But yet at the same time, when I come home at the end of the day, he's right there. Hi, how are you?
There are many cats that will do that, and there are others, too, that just naturally will just kind of stay to the back. They have their own little hierarchy, just like dogs do. They have the alpha and what's called the pariah, which is the very bottom of the actual clouder is the proper term for a family of cats. It's not a pride or anything like that. It's called clouder. But they all have their own individual personalities. They all have to learn how to interact, and sometimes those interactions don't always work well.
Kind of like people.
Exactly.
So, well, this is a question that I know that we've gotten from time to time when we've done the program on dog behavior, is somebody's bringing two households together. Somebody has dogs, somebody has cats, or somebody has, both parties have cats, or they have a family and they want to adopt another cat. What kind of advice do you have for making that transition, for smoothing the way for those animals to find their place with one another?
That's a great question. It's one that I get often. Most important is time and patience, number one. Just like we have individual personalities, as I mentioned, so do they. What I recommend any time that we're either adopting another cat or, as you mentioned, blending a household, the incoming cat has to have its own little private room, whether that's a bathroom, a third bedroom, or somewhere that you can actually have it enclosed. The cat can feel secure. The litter box is placed in there, food and water in there. That's its little safety haven. I recommend putting a towel or some sort of barrier so the bottom of the door, they cannot get interacting underneath the door playing footsie, if you will, until about 24 to 48 hours. I also am an advocate, again, of having that synthetic pheromone called Feel-Away. I have clients plug that in a couple of weeks ahead of time if they have the time frame to do that, to get that pheromone circulating through the home, so when the cat's coming there, it's already in that house. After about 24 to 48 hours, I recommend you pull that towel or whatever you're using as an obstruction out of the way and then slowly open the door and slowly let the cats interact. The other thing that I do recommend is having some sort of cloth or towel, whether it's a t-shirt that you've gone ahead and actually put your own, the cat's.
You've worn it or something.
Yes, that one. And also by rubbing the resident cat or the cat that's already living there, and then putting that in the new incoming cat's room, and then vice versa, so they're already getting used to each other's odors. Dogs can be a little bit more difficult in the sense that, especially if the cat's never been around the dog, mm-hmm. that can startle them a lot more as far as the barking or the sudden onslaught of noise that they're not used to, the scratching, the mm-hmm. running across a potential wood floor. They're not used to hearing the nails and such. But time is definitely very important. And that reason why I keep that door like that, that cat can mm-hmm. run back into its little private safety haven again. If it gets afraid, mm-hmm. go ahead and shut the door and give it some mm-hmm. time. Don't expect them just to interact immediately.
Yeah. Let's take a call. We've got a listener waiting for us in Champaign on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I have a cat behavior question for you. So we have a relatively new Siamese in the family. We got her when she was only about 8 weeks old, and she's now maybe 8 months old. And she sleeps with us at night. She sleeps down at the foot of the bed. But every night what she does is she will come up sometime during the night, start purring very loudly, snuggle in with my wife, usually on her arm or on her chest, and then she'll start kneading with her claws. And she's purring very loudly all at the same time. After a while, that stops, and she goes back, down to the bottom of the bed. Is this a common behavior in cats? I've had cats when I was a kid, but I don't remember this sort of stuff going on. I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, thanks for the question. Starting back from the cat, when your Siamese was 8 weeks of age, there's a possibility that it was taken away from its mother or queen, as we call the female cat, too early. So the socialization and the bonding was broken a little bit too early. Let's not forget that cats are also a nocturnal creature, so they're going to be busier at night and more active at night because that's generally where they're out hunting and getting ready for breeding, mm-hmm. et cetera. As far as what I would recommend if that's being too disturbing for your wife and then the cat's waking the two of you up every single night, try and spend some time before you go to bed, interact with her there, play with her, get her a little bit tired if you can, and maybe feed her a little bit of meal before you go to bed. I'm not an advocate of recommending locking the cat out of the room. Some people do that, and I understand that because it helps them sleep at night, but sometimes that can actually escalate the problem to a different level.
Yeah.
The kneading portion is starts from the time a kitten is born because it's actually how they'll massage the mammary gland to get the milk down so they can actually suckle. So that's part of her bonding of what she's doing. She's actually redirecting that towards your wife and having that little bond ensue. I don't know if we can actually completely change that and have that go away, but I think if you can interact with her and get her active at night, she may sleep through the night easier for you and she may not disturb you as much.
What makes for a well-socialized cat?
I recommend taking a cat away from its queen no earlier than 12 weeks of age because there's still a lot of learning for that kitten between 8 weeks and 12 weeks of age. State law can advocate and allow for breeders to release a cat, at least in the state of Illinois, if at 8 weeks of age is the absolute earliest. But we try and encourage breeders, and most of them do, to go ahead and release the cat around 3 months of age because it gives that crucial time for learning lessons from the queen to the kitten as far as what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. If you watch them interact, she'll sit there and put her paw and hold them down if they're doing something wrong to let them know that's not good behavior and you cannot continue doing this.
Yeah, cats are good moms.
Mm-hmm.
So how about feel away in the bedroom?
I would recommend that too. I'm a big fan of that. I see a lot of results, and I think it works about 80 to 90% of the cats that I've dealt with. There's a few outliers where it won't work for. In worst case scenario, we have to go into some pharmaceutical assistance, but we try and avoid that at all costs.
Yeah. Outside of a kitten being removed for whatever reason from the queen, I've also heard the queen referred to as a Molly. New for you?
I've never heard that.
Anyway, just interesting. Are there things that put cats at risk of a broken bond, of an inability to bond?
I think that's one of the issues that we have sometimes with the feral colonies. Feral meaning the wild cats, the cats mm-hmm. that are truly unsocialized. They're out in a forest preserve or out in the farmland, and they're breeding, and they've never had any type of human contact. I think that the more interaction that the kitten has with the human from the time it's born you're allowing for that interaction, that bonding to ensue, and to realize this is a good thing to
We're
be learning.
For one another.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Also, I would imagine that with a young cat, as with dogs, and I know this from talking with the dog trainers, that you would want to let them in on life, so to speak. I mean, that is, they need a variety of experiences. I know that right now we have an older cat, and we adopted him when he was already 5 years old. But he's, you know, that was 5-6 years ago. He's still a young cat. But, you know, if I was to begin working with a cat, a kitten that was 12 weeks old or, you know, 6 months old, a young animal, I think I would want to be able to have that animal so comfortable with me in an automobile, in that crate, at the vet. So what advice do you have for people like the caller with a young animal? Is that something you would encourage them to do?
Definitely. I'm very glad that you brought that up, too. I think having as much exposure to changes as far as from the time of putting the kitten in a carrier, taking him for a little ride, coming back to the house, everything is okay, treats, positive reinforcement, that definitely is going to make that whole ride and interaction more favorable and less fearful for the cat. Definitely recommend with clients, since you're basically their doctor at home until you can bring them to the veterinarian, touching their paws, trying to push out their claws a little bit to teach them as far as nail trimming makes it a lot less traumatic for the cat. Opening and closing their mouth, touching their ears, so it's not less, it's less stressful for them when they come to us. Picking them up, touching them, turning them upside down, all of
grooming.
Those things.
Grooming.
Very much so.
Dental health.
That's right. Okay. And that'll definitely help as far as opening the mouth when we have to go ahead and do that and assess and do an oral assessment as if there's any problems or pathology in there. Some cats are just going to be, what are you trying to do for me? And at the same time, they may even bite.
Yeah. This is Focus. We're talking this morning about cats. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you're invited to join us this morning. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting at the moment, so join us. Give us a call. Or join us by email. Diet and nutrition. What are the needs of cats and how do they change over the lifespan?
Definitely recommend measured feeding and free feeding. So measuring the amount of dry food that you're feeding them, a well-balanced commercial diet I'm a fan of. I'm not necessarily a fan of raw diets. A well-balanced commercial diet that is measured so we can avoid and decrease the possibility of obesity, which is very prevalent both with cats and dogs. And once we get on that track, we have to put them on different diets and increase their exercise, try and get their weight back to an ideal weight, because just like with cats and humans, the obesity-related disease is very significant, anywhere from diabetes to arthritis to cardiac disease, heart disease. We don't want to get on to that particular route. I do recommend a combination of a moist and dry diet. I don't like cats just being strictly on a dry diet because I feel they're just a little bit dehydrated from it. Plus, they've evolved to eat the bird and the mouse. There's some moisture in there when they're actually eating their prey. As far as the changes as they're aging, yes, the diets that are commercially made are actually formulated from kitten to help with high protein growth, acuity, brain development. There's some additives to those particular diets that will enhance that development. Then as we start to age into an adult, senior, geriatric, there's changes throughout those particular diet formulas to assist with the aging process.
Yeah. Carrie Carlson is our guest this morning. She's a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, and she specializes in feline medicine and surgery at her Champaign Clinic, the Cat Clinic of Central Illinois. Let's go to the phones now and take another call. This is a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Hi. I have two questions and a brief anecdote, since I think I'm the only caller right now, right?
Well, there's one behind you, but go ahead.
Oh, there's one behind me. Okay.
We're happy
to
hear
from
you.
Well, we had a cat who, you know, showed his independence, and we had a dog. And we would walk the dog, and the cat would just happen to show up and just happen to be going in the same direction. He wasn't with us. He just happened to be close by. So, and then my first question is, what's the oldest cat you've seen in your practice, and about how many cats do you see over 20? And that's sort of one question. And the other is, do big cats purr, you know, like lions and tigers and jaguars?
Oh, interesting question.
Leopards.
Okay.
So the oldest cat that I've personally seen was 29.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And the cat was fantastic looking. I mean, the genes that this particular cat had was unbelievable. I mean, you wouldn't even tell by looking at the cat that he was that old. And it was documented. They had proof. So it was something that the cat was following.
Wow.
Yes. As far as how many cats I see over the age of 20, that's basically the new 30, if you will. There's a lot of cats that are actually due to the changes in diets that we have now offered as far as commercial diets, and realize the deficiencies in certain amino acids that cats need to actually acquire from their diet, since they cannot manufacture them individually for themselves. I'm sorry, I just dropped this.
That's okay. There you go.
Okay, thank you. So I lost my train of thought here. Okay, so 20,
so
the age of 20.
They're living longer in
because
we're
diet and bringing them to the veterinarian, mm-hmm. preventative care, and addressing issues as they
and
arise.
And we're learning more and more about cats, mm-hmm. and it's out there, and vets are learning more and more about it, right. in the training of vets.
And large cats do not purr.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank
You're
you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Next, we take a call from a listener in Urbana, line 2. Hi.
Hello. I was wondering, how does the guest feel about cat foods that contain grains? And I was also wondering, for people that have pets but are lower income, what can they do to take care of their pets? And then one last question, my cat is extremely loud. She likes to wander around and yell at us. And I was wondering how much of this is behavioral and how much of this is breed-based.
How old is your cat?
Our cat is, she was a stray, so she's between 9 and 10 now.
And how long has she been walking around the house meowing?
Pretty much since we got her.
And how long have you had her?
About 8 or 9 years.
So that's always been normal behavior for her. Is she the only cat in the household?
She is the only cat in the household.
And the only pet?
And the only pet.
Okay. And how does she interact with you? Is she more of a solo cat, or is she kind of hanging out wherever you're at all times?
She is somewhat of a solo cat. When we come home, she's usually at the door, and she kind of coos or meows when we come into the house. She likes to spend her afternoon in her bed by the window. She's kind of a little bit of both, I guess.
Do you know the type of breed she is?
I do not. I know that she has blue eyes, an adult cat. She's got sort of a little crook in her tail at all times. Other than that, I don't really have much information on her breed.
And what color is she?
She is white and gray, and she's got some stripes on the tail, and she's got some orange on her face and ears.
Very colorful. The reason why I was asking about the particular breed, the Siamese or the Asian breeds tend to be more talkative, and they're very vocal. So being that she's always been like this her whole life, that's basically her particular personality. Sometimes we have cats that are blue-eyed and white-haired. They can have a defective gene where they're actually deaf. So if she can hear you, then I would discount that. So that would be another reason where I would consider that maybe that's why she's being more vocal, if there is actually a hearing problem at hand. As far as the grain-free diets, we are finding more and more food allergies are becoming more prevalent in both cat and dogs. So I am a fan of grain-free. I don't always necessarily see that those particular diets work for a cat who has inflammatory bowel disease or any type of food allergy or skin allergies. But I do recommend that, mainly because, as I mentioned earlier in the program, that since they've evolved to eat the bird and the mouse, they're a high protein obligate carnivore, so they're dedicated to eating proteins. There's really not a necessity for the grains.
Okay,
and I think there was one other question about lower.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, lower income people who have pets and may have difficulty affording, you know, yearly checkups or regular visits.
Nice question.
So there are options for lower income individuals as far as some of the local shelters, depending on where you're at and where in the country you are. There are some shelters that will go ahead and provide low cost treatment, spay neuter programs. We participate in a spay neuter program that's also assisted by the state of Illinois for people who are on disability or if they're on food stamps to go ahead and assist them if they need any type of medical care. There are veterinarians, and I'm one of them, that do offer payment plans for individuals because if they can't quite afford it and it's a bigger amount of money or a larger sum for them to go ahead and pay in the beginning, that payment plans are an option.
Okay, very good. This is Focus, and we're talking this morning with veterinarian Carrie Carlson. She specializes in feline medicine and surgery at her Champaign clinic, the Cat Clinic of Central Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn, and we'll be back in just a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, conductor Michael Tilson Thomas tells us about his new PBS special celebrating his grandparents, Boris and Bessie Tomaszewski, pioneers of the Yiddish theater. The show features music from the Yiddish stage. Also, a former sports agent comes clean on the dirty business of college football. We talk with Joshua Lux about his new memoir. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
This is Focus from Illinois Public Media. We're talking today about cats with Dr. Carrie Carlson. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to join us. Toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's go back to the phones and talk with another listener. This is someone in Wellington on line 4. Good morning.
Yes, it was nice to have cat people on.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay, we have a 14-year-old calico. Just, it was a stray, so to speak, although we raised it from the mother died when these kittens were very, very small. And we kept this long-haired calico. She's, number one, she's not very good at grooming herself, and she's kind of an indoor-outdoor. She lives in my husband's business establishment, which is somewhat dirty environment. So how can I, you know, being a long hair, that's kind of an issue with, you know, staying up with her combing and everything. So what would you suggest that might be helpful in that realm? And then I've got a couple other things to say, too.
Okay.
So as far as, are you actually combing her?
Yes.
Okay. And does
I try to every couple days, but sometimes I'm lax and then we get matting and then that becomes an issue and we've had to have parts of her trim different times.
So that might be what's in store for her, and it might be a little easier for both of you. Is there are, as far as grooming her, there are groomers that can go ahead and actually shave the hair down. I never recommend having the legs or the tail completely shaved and just shaving up to about their neck, where we can bring it down to a level of hair growth that you can get by probably for about 3 or 4 months before it grows back again. And that way she won't have to have more mats and the uncomfortable situation of when trying to demat them too.
Okay. She's also diabetic. She developed diabetes a couple years ago, and the vet I took her to recommended putting her on a very high protein diet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're feeding her. She has grain-free dry food that she kind of free feeds on. We just put out, you know, so much a day, but she can free feed from that amount.
Good.
And then in the mornings, well, I feed her a combination of like a quarter of a decent size, but, you know, bigger than Fancy Feast, but small size cans, and a heaping tablespoon of tuna. I found tuna actually bought on sale is cheaper than the cat food. And She eats it. Well, at, you know, within a week of our starting her on this grain-free, high-protein diet, this cat just went from just dragging herself around to jumping up and down and running, and just, you know, her whole life just changed back to what it was, you know, a few years ago. So I am kind of an advocate of that, particularly it has worked well with her with this diabetic problem. The other thing is this winter she developed a growth, which turned out to be malignant, and from one of those vaccine-induced things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of, the vet lasered it off and said, well, you know, we probably didn't get it all, but, you know, it's kind of a, you know, nobody knows what the prognosis is. It could be short term or it could be, you know, she could get along for months or a year or something. So I'm kind of interested in your take on that sort of thing. And also, what are vets doing now to kind of take care of that issue?
As far as the vaccine-associated tumors?
Right.
Okay. So I'll back up to your first statement. As far as the diabetes, was she being treated for that, or were you just trying a high-protein diet?
No, we noticed she was drinking just oodles and oodles of water, and mm-hmm. her litter box was swimming. And, you know, I just kind of had a feeling that, you know, since she was getting to be an older cat, that this might be an issue, and took her to the vet where they diagnosed that.
And then she was placed on insulin, or
no?
Okay,
so she said if she would respond pretty well to that, and her blood counts did come down.
Excellent.
Quite a lot, and she, you know, they're probably still higher than normal if you put her on insulin. But she said they respond pretty well to that type of diet, and it just really perked her up immensely.
Again, that's definitely, as far as a diabetic scenario, we do put them on a high-protein diet, since cats use protein and amino acids to actually stimulate the pancreas to release insulin, different than humans and dogs who use carbohydrates to actually stimulate insulin release from the pancreas to handle the glucose and usher it back into the cell, so we don't have too much blood sugar floating around in the bloodstream. So that is excellent that she responded just on diet management alone. So that is actually fabulous for her. I'm very happy to hear that. The tuna, I do have a concern. I just want to make sure and bring to your attention, you're making sure that the tuna is in water and it's not the oil tuna, correct?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's water.
Good, good, because we don't want to feed tuna with oil in it, because it actually can put fat around their heart. So we definitely want to make sure that callers and the public know that. As far as if you're going to feed tuna, I don't have a problem with that, as long as she doesn't have any vomiting or diarrhea off of it. That's additional moisture that she's getting to. Good job feeding the moist food also, the Fancy Feast size. Or it was Fancy Feast, or just you just
no,
use
I
that as a...
her wellness.
Okay, that's a very good diet. Very good diet.
It's hard to procure in this area.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the growth that she had, was that located between her shoulder blades, or was that located on one of her limbs?
No, it was on her shoulder blade.
Okay. So that is one of the first things that, as veterinarians, that we're straying away from, or have strayed away from, vaccinating cats between their shoulder blades because of this vaccine-associated sarcoma, it's called. A sarcoma is a soft tissue tumor. We now have vaccinations that are placed in the right hind leg if it's rabies, or left hind leg if it's a distemper shot, or leukemia is where I'll put that there also, mm-hmm. in that general vicinity. Putting the vaccines as low down as possible on the limb, just in case the cat does develop a tumor from that. It's about 1 in 10,000 of cats will actually have this particular tumor. We thought it was just related strictly to the vaccine and the type of vehicle that's used within the vaccine to induce the immune response, which would render that vaccine effective for the body, for the host. But we have now found that there is actually a genetic component, too, as far as there's a certain gene that can actually turn on and allow that tumor to grow. By the time we find that mass with that particular type of tumor, it's generally a fibrosarcoma, those particular tendrils that are part of that actual tumor are already way down deep within the tissue. So That's the main reason why we've moved away from going between the shoulder blades, because we can't go all the way down mm-hmm. into the chest. Mm-hmm. By the time we find it and diagnose that's what it is, resecting that or taking away that large volume of tumor becomes very difficult. There are some casts that it has been treated that way, aggressive surgery. Radiation is not necessarily something you can put in that area because of the lung field, but linear accelerator treatment. There are a few veterinary schools across the country that do have linear accelerator that can actually be used for that type of treatment. Why we place them on the legs and as low down as possible, because if we do end up having a soft tissue tumor, then we can amputate the leg and have the largest or the longest survival rate for that particular cat.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your information.
Thank
You're
you.
You're very welcome. And next I'm going to go to the email folder. Someone with a couple of questions. Two cats in this household, indoor, outdoor, one male, one female. The female has a tendency to pee on expensive rugs, even with two litter boxes in the house. How do I get her to stop this behavior? And we'll tackle that question first, and then I'll ask the second one.
So my first concern anytime a cat is, whether it's male or female, is urinating outside of a box, is we have to determine if it's pathological, meaning there's an actual problem, whether that's a urinary tract mm-hmm. infection, if there's stones, if there's crystals. There's a level of discomfort for the cat, so they're viewing the litter box as the area where this hurts when I urinate, so I'm going to go find somewhere else to go. So I definitely recommend, and any veterinarian would recommend, that if you're having any cat that's urinating on the box, that they should be seen by a veterinarian and a urine sample should be collected to make sure and start to rule out if there's any pathology or any problem for that particular cat. The other part, it could be husbandry, so basically how the human being is actually taking care of the cat's environment. We ideally recommend for a cat, as far as the number of litter boxes, there should be one box for every cat in the household plus one. So if we have two cats, in the perfect world, we should have three litter boxes. They can be placed in different areas of the home, especially when we have a multi-cat household. I do recommend that so that there's not any type of a cat's not getting along with another cat. There's no ambush situation going on, or prevention of the cat, or cornering the cat if they're not getting along. And that could be another reason why the cat is urinating or defecating outside the box, because they don't want to go near the litter box. As far as husbandry, again, how well we're keeping our boxes clean, scoop your litter boxes daily, change that litter weekly, and clean the litter box. Soap and water, you can put a little vinegar or a little bit of Lysol to keep it nice and clean.
And that's even with clumping products?
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
All right.
Definitely. Because no matter how much, even when we're scooping every single day, we're still leaving behind some residual bacteria, some residual ammonia that the cat may not particularly care for. I wouldn't. And as far as behavioral, if there, again, that can go, again, to the feel-away situation, or if there is some sort of problem interaction between those two cats, again, going back to somebody mm-hmm. cornering each other, or if they're not getting along, or having a litter box that's in a high traffic area that's startling the cat, and you're opening the door and the cat's in the middle of defecating and it scares them, then they're going to relate that as to a problem area.
Okay, very good. And quickly, the next question. What's your opinion about cat dental cleanings? Are they really necessary?
Dentals are important. We do know dental cleanings are important because we do know that the bacteria can travel through the bloodstream and affect the liver, the kidney, and the heart. Yeah. So that definitely is an important facet. Unfortunately, we do have to put cats under anesthesia to go ahead and perform the procedure. They won't just sit there like a human can. And it's also very important for us to take x-rays or dental x-rays to check for any problem going on underneath the gum line, which we may not be able to see grossly when we're actually opening the cat's mouth. Just like us, when we visit our dentist every year, we get dental x-rays to make sure we're not having any abscesses or any problems that are underneath into the actual root line. Basing the type whether or not a cat needs a dental is based on the veterinarian assessing the cat's mouth, looking to see if there's excessive amount of tartar or gingivitis, inflammation around the gums, or any abnormality within the mouth, any type of mass or any abnormal odor. This definitely warrants having a dental procedure
okay.
done.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Line one, hi. Caller in Champaign.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes. Go ahead.
I have a 5-year-old F3 Savannah cat. And my question is regarding this concept I've heard of hybrid vigor, that they these hybrids live longer. Could you comment on that?
I've never heard of that, so I can't comment on that.
And I think we're going to thank the caller for his question. Sorry we couldn't expand on that, but that happens. Let's take another call. This is a listener on line two in Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a problem cat. It's the mother cat, and she has been in my household for probably 13, 14 years. Her daughter lives here, too, and she has been, maybe since Christmas time, following me everywhere, walking all over my books, trying to get up on the table. She follows me around and meows. She's only quiet when I go in a room and close the door. And the other thing that's happened is that I gave one of her daughters, I had to surrender her because the vet couldn't find any problem with that daughter, and she was urinating all over the house on my bed daily. And I'm wondering if that is what's going on with her. She also had to have surgery on her in her mouth. She had some problems with some teeth and had to stay overnight at the vet clinic. I'm wondering, what can I do with this cat? She used to be very shy, very calm kind of cat, but she is just driving me wild now.
So how long ago was the actual surgery in her mouth performed?
About January or so.
And then when did she begin following you around? And
yeah, about the same time. I mean, I can see that she's had some emotional trauma here, but I need to do something about this behavior. She's really annoying.
And when was the time frame when the her kitten was actually removed from the home?
Yeah, well, her kitten was about the same age as she was. She was probably in the fall, mm-hmm. in September or so.
Okay, so there could be a couple of different things going on here. Not, she had a bond, obviously, with and any change in their environment for a cat is what I want to make sure everybody knows, too, can affect them. Death of another cat in the household, a human, a dog, any other companion can affect them. They do go through mourning just like we do. So there's already a separation for her that happened in the fall. The part that I'm just curious about, and I don't know the whole history and what's surrounding her particular situation, but it is a little alarming about the same period of time if there was some sort of surgery going on, if there's some sort of connection there or if there's another issue that needs to be investigated, especially it sounds like she's trying to get your attention, mm-hmm. letting you know that something is going on. So
right.
At this point, I would recommend that you do bring your cat back to your veterinarian for them to do another inspection, at least check her mouth again and make sure that there's
okay.
nothing else secondarily that has now manifested or something else that has now arisen unconnected to what had already, whatever surgery was performed. But anytime a cat's following you around, she's trying to tell you something.
She is. I can tell that. Yeah. Okay. I'll do that.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
And let's get one more call in. This is a listener in Champaign, line three. Hi.
Hi. I had a question. I adopted two male litter mates. They were 4 and a half when I adopted them. And they're sweet and cute and adorable and funny. And but they do this, the kneading thing, which all cats I've ever had do. And but they also will, they'll like latch their mouth onto whatever they're kneading on, like a blanket,
mm-hmm.
and sort of make, it's like an ersatz nipple, I guess.
Yep, that's what they're doing.
Okay, well, and that's kind of cute, but then at the same time, and I'm going to say this delicately, something happens below.
Okay.
And so I don't know what to make of it or you know, what's going on, and they, so if there's anything you can say about what the nether activity is about.
Okay. So the first question for me would be, do you know the type of breed of these particular male litter mates?
I don't. They look just like normal kitties. They're large. They're quite large, not fat. They're just big cats. But otherwise, no.
Okay. The reason why I asked that is there are some, again, the Siamese and the Asian breeds seem to be overrepresented in certain behavioral activities. That particular breed is more predisposed or prone to these suckling behaviors, where they'll actually find carpet or a sock, and they'll begin suckling on that.
Yeah.
Since that's not necessarily the case, they don't seem to be, or in your opinion, may not be a Siamese type breed.
Yeah.
The first thing that I would say, since you don't know, do you know they're from the time you got them? How old were they? Do you know?
They were 4 and a half when I got them.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So they may have been taken away from their mother too soon. There may have been a situation where they were either abandoned or something happened to the queen, because they're still focusing on the suckling behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I mentioned earlier, that does have a calming effect on them. Again,
okay.
That's a bonding effect, so it does make them feel comfortable. The what's going on underneath... they're actually getting overstimulated, and
okay.
That's what's basically happening for them.
Okay, so it's just an all-around sort of pleasure stimulation
exactly.
thing. It's
exactly.
Not, they're not perverts.
No. No, you don't have perverted cats.
Which
but,
I know isn't possible for real, but just as a joke, it's nothing freaky or...
No,
or,
actually, okay. Cats can masturbate just like any other species,
okay.
And that's basically, they're getting to the point where they're getting so stimulated in their suckling behavior,
everything.
And then
okay.
That basically happens.
Okay, so they're just happy.
They're happy, yeah. Good job.
Okay, well, that's it. I'm glad then. And it's funny because they eat anything. And since they came to me at 4 and a half, I mean, they hear me cutting a potato on the chopping block or cabbage or apple. And one of them just goes nuts for produce. And he begs, and he'll steal it if I leave it unattended, which is cute. And I'm very careful about what they eat. They eat their own diet, but occasionally I'll give them a treat, like that. And is that okay?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, since we don't know the history of them, there could have been, if they were out in the wild and whatever, feast or famine, when they came across something to eat, that also could be why they're showing this behavior now, or they're taking off and grabbing something and running. Just be careful not to feed them any type of onions or garlic. And fiber is important for cats. Cats will naturally eat some sort of grass when they're outside. So I'm also an advocate of having pet grass or wheat grass in the house so they can actually get that fiber to help move hairballs through and to help their gastrointestinal tract stay healthy.
We have a guy who is nuts for salad. Red leaf lettuce only, pretty much. And when he hears the salad spinner come out, he's there. He could be, half a mile away. I mean, he's in the house, but anyway, very funny. Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're past our time. Big thank you to Dr. Carrie Carlson of the Cat Clinic of Central Illinois for joining us this morning and answering our questions about cats. You'll find her online at www.catcliniccentralillinois.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.